The story of two missing Evansdale girls has captured the attention of the state and the nation. What's the latest on the investigations, and how can we keep our kids safe? This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, the latest on the investigation of the two missing girls from Evansdale and why an Amber Alert was not used. We'll also hear about an attempted child abduction in Cedar Rapids just this week and be joined by Nancy McBride of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, keeping our kids safe after this news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The story of two missing Evansdale girls has captured the attention of the state and of the nation. Authorities have followed up on hundreds of tips since July 13th, when 10-year-old Lyric Cook Morrissey and her cousin, 9-year-old Elizabeth Collins, went missing from Evansdale. This hour, the latest on the case. Also later, we'll hear about an attempted child abduction in Cedar Rapids. That was just this week. And we'll learn what parents can do, what we all can do to keep children safe. Joining us, first of all, Captain Rick Abbin of the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office. Captain Abbin, welcome to our program. Captain, you're there?
Yes, go ahead.
Remind us briefly what we know about the circumstances of these girls' disappearance on July 13th.
Well, what we know is that we have two girls that were last seen by their grandmother at about 12:15. On Friday the 13th, when they went for a bike ride. We have them on videotape at a business not too far from the grandmother's, where the grandmother was babysitting. It's actually at one of the girls' homes here, the Collins residence.
Is that a surveillance camera video?
Yes, it is. It's a surveillance camera video that was on a auction house in Evansdale, and we have them on the bicycles there. The next thing, the bicycles were found at about 4 o'clock that afternoon by a volunteer fireman at Myers Lake.
How far are those apart from each other?
Probably a mile, a little over a mile. And then also the purse of the Collins girl. And so they drugged the lake. We were unable to find them. They started draining the lake. We called in the FBI, and they brought special sonar equipment. And the lake was checked, and they are confident that neither girl is in the lake. So since that time, you know, we've had hundreds of people that have called in, some thinking that they've seen them, some that had found clothing and so forth along different portions of roadways, not only in Blackhawk County, but also in other parts of the state of Iowa. We're getting leads from different places across the nation now that people, if they think maybe they have seen them, and so we're utilizing the FBI and also the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation, sheriff's investigators, and assisting the Evansdale Police Department in trying to locate these two girls.
Can you tell us if the focus of the leads, the promising leads, are keeping you in state or having you look out of the state?
Well, both, actually, but most of them are here in the state of Iowa, but we have had some outside the state that we have had law enforcement in other states respond to for us, and so far those have not come up with anything positive for us.
Captain Abbin, a number of people have made it into the press being questioned. A store clerk, for instance, what can you tell us about that?
Well, I can't because I'm not you know, privy to that information of all the tips that have come in and everyone that has been questioned, so I'm not sure what the situation is with that.
And also the tip with the man who was driving a white van. I think these people have been questioned and they've been released, right?
That is correct. They were talked to, and law enforcement is satisfied with what we've been told, that they are not involved. So,
thankfully, it has been ruled out that they are at the bottom of that lake or in that lake. What is the basis of the confidence that this may be an abduction?
Well, the fact that you know, they're confident that they're not in the lake. Secondly, that if they were lost in that area out there, they would have been found by now, because it's not that big of an area. You know, there's no other indications. None of the family members said, hey, you know, I came and picked them up and took them to my house to, you know, to visit or anything like that. So other than that.
It's really then only the process of elimination that leads you to abduction and not any evidence that is directly connected with that.
Well, and that's correct, you know, and to say that that is even, you know, it's not an absolute. I mean, we have nothing to prove that, but we don't have anything to disprove it either.
Right. Now, let's talk about how the public can help. You get hundreds of leads. You want to continue to encourage the public to call, to get in contact, even if they think what they saw, what they suspect, what they witnessed may have nothing to do with the case?
That's correct. You know, it's because, you know, what they feel and what law enforcement feels could be two different things. Obviously, and if they think they may have some information that would be beneficial, we encourage them to call the tip line and let us know so we can have someone follow up on those. And if it goes nowhere, then that's fine. But, you know, we only need one good, solid tip that could break this case, you know, farther wide open for us so we can get these girls back.
Can you give us an estimate of how many people are working on this case, have been since July 13th?
Well, you know, there's just all these different agencies that we have as far as law enforcement, plus the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children have sent representatives here. We had close to 1,000 civilian volunteers the first day and about 900 the second day helping us. So there have been a lot of people and man hours put into this.
Mm-hmm. I know there's a lot of information, some tips, some information you have that you cannot share with us, and people may find that frustrating because we want to find these girls safe and sound and know as much as about them as possible. Help us understand why in this sort of investigation the authorities are having, in some cases, to be very tight-lipped about any new leads they may have.
Well, you know, it's if this is a criminal investigation, if it turns out to be that, obviously, you know, we don't give out information that that we may need when it comes to trial or something like that. So a lot of that stuff is kept quiet until, you know, we think that it's necessary to release it.
Mm-hmm. And now, authorities are still looking for information about the reported abduction attempt in Cedar Rapids that was earlier this week. Do you have any involvement with that investigation?
Well, no, not with the investigation. I mean, we are looking for that same vehicle, the description that they put out on this white Chevy Astro van. You know, we're looking for that vehicle also if we would get calls on it up in this area. They did put out the attempt to locate on that vehicle along with three people, two males and a female, that were seen by that young man's father and then also another independent witness. So we are looking for that vehicle.
Will you rule out any possible connection with the Evansdale case here?
I can't rule it out. You know, I can't say yes, it was involved, and I can't say no, that it was not, because I don't have anything to prove or disprove that at this time.
So if anybody listening has information on a white Chevy Astro van, and in particular in connection with two males and a female, they should do what?
They should call the Cedar Rapids Police to begin with, or the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office here in Waterloo, or the tip line to get people, you know, involved, or call 911, and so we can get people going that direction.
Captain Rick Abbin of the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office, thank you very much for your time, sir.
Okay, have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
And this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, and today, obviously, talking about missing children, in particular the case of the two missing Evansdale girls. But we want to talk about something that happened earlier this week with Sergeant Christy Hamblin. She's a public information officer with the Cedar Rapids Police Department. Sergeant Hamblin, are you on the line?
Yes, I am.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Now, we mentioned with Captain Abbin of the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office this case in Cedar Rapids. I understand authorities are still looking for information about a reported abduction attempt in Cedar Rapids. What can you tell us about what happened?
Well, it was Tuesday afternoon, about 5:30, out near Kirkwood Community College on Kirkwood Boulevard. We had a 5-year-old boy that was riding his bicycle on a sidewalk. Now, his dad was riding a motorcycle out in the street, following behind him, and a white van stopped. A white male and a white female got out of the van, and then there was a white male that was driving as well. Mm-hmm. The white male and white female walked up to the boy, started talking to them or him, and started to guide him back to the van. At that time, the dad thought that was odd and started yelling and was running, stopped his motorcycle, started running over to his son and these people. And so then they let go of the bike, and the boy got back into the van and drove away. Mm-hmm. So we really don't know what the intent was. We don't know if it was, you know, truly an abduction, if they were concerned. We don't know what their intent was. So we're treating it as an attempted abduction and trying to find anything we can about them.
Okay, so far this white van, mysterious white van, not been located yet.
Correct.
Now, this happened Tuesday afternoon. When was it reported?
It was reported about 3 hours later, and you know, there's been a lot of question, why didn't he report it right away? And in speaking to the dad, he wasn't real sure until he was talking to the rest of his family, you know, should they report it, should they not report it? He wasn't sure that it was going, you know, they were trying to abduct them, or why, you know, what was going on. So in speaking to the rest of his family, that's when they determined that, yeah, they wanted to report it to the police. Because it was suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Tell us other ways in which you are investigating this. You're looking for this van, those people. How else are you following up here?
It's re-educating the community. And it's very frustrating. You know, as the captain was talking about, you know, their frustrations, that we want to follow up with every lead that we possibly can, but we want substantial information as well. Now, we've gotten several phone calls from concerned citizens, and they're trying to do good. But when somebody calls in and says, there's a white van in my neighborhood, well, that's not going to do us any good. It needs to be, you know, okay, there's a white van in my neighborhood, there's a white man and a white woman in the van, and this is a license plate. Or, you know, something with more substance in it than just, it's a white van.
Mm-hmm. There are just too many white vans out there.
There are thousands of white vans in the state of Iowa.
Yeah,
and,
of course.
That which leads as well, that not all white vans contain bad people. Majority of the white vans are nice people, I'm sure.
Of course. And as you mentioned, getting the license plate numbers, that's critical. So when you see it, make a note of it, a mental note, and then write it down. It may be important later on.
Absolutely, or anything unique about it. I know we've had other cases where they put on the wrong license plate. However, what we were able to do, because it had, it seemed like it was a vehicle, and they put the wrong plate on it, but it had a discolored car door on it.
Mm-hmm.
So anything unique about a vehicle as well, it had the back bumper on the driver's side was dented in, or it had a big scratch, or you know, something unique about it will be just as crucial as that license plate will be.
This apparent abduction attempt, along with the missing Evansdale girls, has people appropriately frustrated, concerned. How often does something like this happen in the Cedar Rapids area?
I mean, it's really not all that often. I would say probably, you know, a couple times a year we'll have a reported case of someone, you know, we've had kids walking home from school, and someone has stopped and said, you know, hey, could you help me find my puppy, or could you, you know, give me directions? And the key is for parents to talk to their kids. You know, it shouldn't take two young girls from Evansdale missing or this, you know, attempted abduction for parents to talk to their kids. Start talking to them when they're 3-4 years old. They're going to be outside playing. Start talking to them as soon as you possibly can, not to create paranoia in the kids, but to educate them. Talk to them about, you know, the boundaries. You know, who are, you know, what is a stranger? Can you talk to strangers? What, you know, just because somebody is driving a nice car or they're dressed nicely doesn't mean that they're always going to be a nice stranger. And the exact opposite, if they're dressed, you know, in holy jeans and a T-shirt, doesn't mean that they're necessarily bad. but it's just somebody that you don't know. And it's a parent should start talking to them at a young age, and the schools and the police departments going into the schools will reinforce what the parents have talked to them about.
Okay, thank you very much, Sergeant Christy Hamblin, Public Information Officer with the Cedar Rapids Police Department. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
And as we continue to talk about missing children, you may wonder why we haven't heard an Amber Alert in connection with this case. Let's talk with Stephen Ray about that. He's a public service executive, regional manager with the Iowa State Patrol Communications in Des Moines and Cedar Falls. Stephen Ray, you are in our Des Moines studio. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ben.
We want to talk about a couple different things. One I neglected to talk with Sergeant Hamblin about, but in the Cedar Rapids area. But let's talk about the Amber Alert. That's very well known. It's been going on since 2004, I believe it was initiated. Correct?
2003, actually.
2003.
Yes.
What is an Amber Alert?
Well, an Amber Alert. First of all, Amber is an acronym that stands for America's Missing Broadcast Emergency Response. And it is a tool by which law enforcement uses the information upon a confirmed abduction to push that out through the media and to the public by various means that we have available to us, essentially making it a hot flash type message to put out there that we have a confirmation of an abduction of a child in this case. That's the basis for what it's used for. There is a specific criteria. All 50 states have a plan. Iowa's is pretty close to in line how the national recommendation is. If you'd like, I could go through them. There's four bullet points.
Yes, like. Please. There are four criteria that it needs to meet all of these in order to be an Amber Alert.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The first one is that law enforcement must confirm that a child has been abducted and that the child has been entered into the NCIC system by that agency as abducted. The child is under the age of 18. Circumstances surrounding the abduction indicate that the child is in danger of serious bodily harm or death. And then along with that third bullet, what causes you to believe the child is in danger? And when you locate the child and whoever they are with, will you make an arrest and file charges? And then finally, the final bullet, there is enough descriptive information about the child, abductor, and or the suspect's vehicle to believe an immediate broadcast alert will help.
Okay, so what we did not have an Amber Alert for the Evansdale, missing Evansdale girls on July 13th or thereafter. Why not?
Well, at the time, we didn't have a confirmation the abduction occurred. We knew we had two missing girls. Speculation began that they were near the lake there. We didn't have any confirmation of an abduction, any suspect information, any vehicle associated with the time. And even though it's an urgent situation, obviously, we have to adhere to the criteria because if we don't, then if you just send out an Amber Alert for any type of case that lacks these basics that you need, then sometimes it reduces the effectiveness of the program.
Mm-hmm.
I know several days later that they weren't found in the lake. They made a local decision that, yes, this is probably an abduction, as you've heard earlier from the captain, but still we are lacking some of the basic needs of the criteria to be met, and that is we just do not have any suspect information or a vehicle or any type of information to go along with it.
Right. Does this type of case, the Evansdale case, make you think there might be room for a revision of the Amber Alert criteria?
You know, I don't believe so. The criteria is pretty tried and true. We have issued alerts in the past where maybe a small piece was not missing. Maybe we knew of a suspect or had an idea of a suspect, but we didn't have a vehicle description. And we knew that there was enough information that they were actually taken by someone. That's still pretty slim, but we've gone ahead and pushed them out. Unfortunately, in this particular case, several basic elements were missing mm-hmm. in order to do the Amber Alert.
Since its existence, you said, goes back to 2003, what has been the success rate of Amber Alerts when they are issued?
Well, we've had a number of success here in Iowa. We've only issued one Amber Alert back in 2005 in a case where the child was actually murdered. All the others have been successful at some point or other. Nationwide, last count, 584 children have been recovered by the Amber Alert plan, and I think that alone shows its success.
Mm-hmm. When there's an abduction taking place, so what has Amber done that hadn't been done previously to the person who is doing the abduction? Putting what pressure on them immediately so that there's really less or no place to hide?
Certainly. In fact, we've had cases here in Iowa where we know the abductor has essentially given up or even in one case dropped the victim off somewhere and took off, was eventually located later and taken into custody. But when they heard the Amber Alert going out on the media, and there's statistics to back that up at the national level that abductors have let their captors go when they've heard these Amber Alerts go out. So I believe it has been very effective in that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, some local communities have their own ways of finding people. For instance, the Cedar Rapids Police Department has something called Operation Quick Find. I don't know if you are acquainted enough with that to tell us the difference between that and Amber.
Now, those are local plans that they use. There are other avenues out there that some counties have where they have these Code Red is another one that's been used by some agencies here in Iowa. It's another means for them to push that information out to their local level. The Iowa Amber Alerts is a huge tool, and one of the reasons why we want to make sure that when we activate it, that it's being activated according to the criteria is because it touches so many things. By the push of a button at our dispatch center in Des Moines, when they issue the Amber Alert, it goes out, it immediately hits the media, it goes to all the weather alert radios, even the Iowa Lottery will take the information and extract it and put license plate information on their tickets that they sell at the counters, it's on their screens that they have at their lottery sales at convenience stores. It's just huge. It even goes out to all 20-some thousand state employees via email immediately, and that touches a lot of people throughout the state. So it is, it's a huge thing when it goes out, and the goal is to make it a news story right away. And even though we did not have an Amber Alert in this situation, the media was extremely helpful from the beginning. And the missing girls in Evandale, it went national right away. I mean, I know all the cable networks picked it up, so that's kind of the goal, is to get the information out there.
Okay. Stephen Ray with the Iowa State Patrol, thank you very much for joining us for this half hour.
You bet, Ben. Thanks.
Okay. When we come back, we're going to continue our discussion about missing children past these cases, the attempted abduction earlier this week in Cedar Rapids, also the missing girls in Evansdale. We want to talk with Nancy McBride, National Safety Director of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, to get a wider, broader picture. Also ask her how this case in Evansdale seems to fit in with other missing children cases in the country. Have you had a scary situation with your kids? Have you changed the way you supervise your kids because of this case or previous cases? Join our discussion with your questions, your comments, 1-866-780-9100. River to River at iowapublicradio.org. That's 1-800-1866-780-9100. Also tweet us at IPR Talk. Back with more of River to River in just a moment. Back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today we're picking up on the story of the two missing Evansdale girls that have captured the attention of the state, also the nation. Heard in our first half hour, authorities are following up on hundreds of tips that are given since that disappearance on July 13th, when 10-year-old Lyric Cook Morrissey, her cousin as well, 9-year-old Elizabeth Collins, went missing from Evansdale. And also, perhaps a related abduction attempt in Cedar Rapids earlier this week. Authorities still looking for information about the reported abduction attempt in Cedar Rapids involving a white Chevy Astro van. Two males and a female. If you have information on that, be sure to get in touch with the Cedar Rapids Police Department. Joining us for the rest of the hour, Nancy McBride. She is the National Safety Director at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Nancy, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Ben. It's good to be with you.
Let's, before we broaden out our perspective here and have you clue us in how this fits into the context as you look nationwide, give us your thoughts on this Iowa case, these Iowa cases. You've been listening this first half hour.
Well, unfortunately, I'm not directly working on these cases. We have a case manager who's doing that. I've been following the attempts and obviously the story, and would certainly encourage your listeners not to give up, that it's very, very important that we keep looking to find these children, and the National Center will be part of that search until we do find them.
Mm-hmm. How is the National Center part of that search?
Well, I think you heard the first gentleman mention that we had sent representatives to the site. We have a Team Adam team, if you will, and these are retired law enforcement officers who are trained to go out on these abductions and help law enforcement with leads or anything they want them to do. So we had these representatives on scene right away. And we've also been working the cases at the National Center with our flyer distribution, staying in touch with families, staying in touch with law enforcement, helping them with any sort of lead analysis or coordination they need. So we're a partner with law enforcement, and we help any way we can when there's a child missing.
What in particular might the people from your center who are sent in a case like this to Iowa, what sort of expertise might they have that might not be found at the local level?
Well, I think in many instances they have come from an investigative role, and they've come from a role of being part of these cases in the past. I mean, this is a really highly trained, well-developed team, so they certainly understand the whole issue of how to search, how to use the resources that are available, how to coordinate the leads and make sense of them, and just to be there to assist law enforcement, having been in that position in the past themselves.
In this case, two girls, Lyric Cook-Morrissey and her cousin, Elizabeth Collins, perhaps abducted, we don't know. How unusual is it to disappear at once?
Well, I was thinking back on that, and the case that I remember the most is actually Jacob Wetterling, who disappeared in Minnesota some years ago. And two kids weren't taken, but there were three kids together when Jacob was abducted. And I think that's interesting in this particular situation because there were two little girls. I think what we don't know, obviously, is were there multiple abductors? What was the situation here? There are just a lot of unanswered questions, so we don't really know why they were both taken together or what happened to make them go together.
Too many question marks.
Well, I think there are a lot of question marks, and the fact that the two girls were together is obviously something we promote. We want kids to be in groups. We want kids to be supervised. The attempt that happened recently this week in Cedar Rapids it's just heart-stopping. I mean, here's a little boy riding his bike, and had his dad not been there to see what was going on, I don't think that would have ended well. I mean, obviously he looks like a target because he's on the sidewalk alone, but he wasn't alone. His father was there with him. So mm-hmm. I think that's an important message to send out. We want kids in groups. We want them to be supervised. And we also need to help kids understand what to do if they're confronted with these situations.
Of course, we can't know the intentions of the people that attempted the abduction in Cedar Rapids earlier this week. When you hear a scenario like that take place, be reported, what are possible stories behind it? What could those people possibly have been up to?
Well, I mean, if they were trying to abduct a child, obviously this child on the bike would have been a good target because they thought the child was alone. And I think the fact that there was a woman involved is also a bit disarming to kids. I mean, women tend to be a little more benign and a little more low-key, and a child might be more willing to trust somebody who's a woman than they would a man. Mm-hmm. But even if these people were here for good intentions and they were trying to help that child, my advice in those situations is you call 911 right away and you say, I believe there's a lost child. I need some help. You don't pick up the child with the bike and put them in your vehicle and drive away.
Nancy McBride is with us for the rest of this hour as we look at missing children and what can be done to keep our children safe. National Safety Director at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. If you have a comment or a question for Nancy, please put it to her this half hour, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or you can tweet us at IPR Talk. How many children nationwide go missing every year, Nancy?
Well, the numbers are about 58,000 for what we consider to be a non-family abduction, and all that means is that there's no biological relationship between the abductor and the child.
How many thousand?
58,000.
58,000. Astounding.
Right. And generally, those children are recovered safely. There's a small number in that number, 115, who are children who are the classic stranger abductions, meaning the person is completely unknown to the child or the family and takes the child either to keep the child, to unfortunately murder the child, or takes the child long distances. That's a classic stranger abduction.
That we can put Elizabeth Smart in that category.
Yes, you really can. And it's really interesting when you think about that. That person had been in her home. And that's something to think about, too, for all the parents and guardians out there, to make sure you know who has access and contact with your children. And that's everybody from people working in your home to somebody running an after school or a sports program.
Right. And in that case, it was a handyman or someone posing as a handyman.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think 58,000 missing children a year, a good number of them abductions, why has this case in Evansdale, do you think, gained so much national attention?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. The age of the two little girls. And unfortunately, they're in an age group that's highly susceptible. That 10 to 14-year-old female child in our attempted abduction analysis is the most vulnerable of any age group. I think that's part of it. I think the fact that they were together, which is unusual, and that both of them are gone at the same time. And the fact that this cuts right to our hearts. I mean, these are two little girls enjoying a summer day on their bicycles, and all of a sudden they're gone. So that just strikes everybody. And I've found over my many years that when we have cases like this, those kids become everybody's kids, and everybody gets invested, and everybody wants the children found safely. I think the outpouring that you've experienced in that community with people showing up wanting to volunteer, wanting to be part of it, wanting to help in some way, that's what we do when there is a tragedy like this.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the ethnicity of the children and the location of the missing children in Iowa has anything to do with the national attention. Would, for instance, children who disappeared in an inner city get as much attention nationwide?
Well, we've had that question come up time and time again, Ben, and all I can tell you is the National Center wants every child to get publicity. We have a wonderful system of getting pictures of missing kids out there, and it's really up to the media outlets which ones they choose to focus on.
Let's go to our phones. If you have a comment or a question for Nancy McBride, National Safety Director at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-866-780-9100. Dave is joining us from Norwalk. Hi, Dave. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm a writer, so my mind tends to wander on details. I'm also a father of a young girl. But the one detail that keeps sticking in my mind and relates to a question I have is that the bicycles were left the first time, and on this second abduction attempt, if it was that, in Cedar Rapids, they were also trying to take the bicycle and maybe clean up, and maybe it was an organism that was learning. And so that leads me to think, if this was an organized or is an organized thing, how quickly would they leave the state? And if this grotesque as it sounds, if this were someone harvesting children, what would they do with them? What should we look for as a society? I'll take my answers off the air.
Dave, thank you for your call from Norwalk. Nancy.
That's a tough question. I mean, it depends on, obviously, the motivation of the people taking them. In a lot of these abductions, the motivation is sexual, the child is assaulted, and the child is released. I don't know if the caller's alluding to some sort of human trafficking organization that might be in play here, but I have nothing to back that up.
I think we do. I understand what he's saying. We get the feeling there may be some sort of network out there ferrying children away from their homes. Do we know of such a network?
Well, I mean, the trafficking of children is a huge, huge problem. I don't know of the connection to kids of this age being part of that. I mean, generally the circumstances are different for those kids, so I really can't speak to that.
Let's talk a little bit about what we can do about it. Safety tips for parents, reminders for us, for parents, for those of us, all of us concerned about the safety of children in our neighborhood, wherever we may go. What can you tell us that can improve our awareness and improve our behavior and keep our antenna nice and ready to react?
Well, I think first and foremost, fear is not a good teaching tool. So for all the parents and guardians and other great adults out there who want to talk to kids, the kids already know what's going on. They're already scared. So take this as an opportunity in a very reassuring way to have the conversations with them about safety. And when I say that, I mean the only thing a child needs to know in a situation like this is to get away. And you need to talk to kids about the fact they do not need to be polite. They don't have to respond. And they should never, ever get close to the vehicle or certainly in the vehicle. And then once you've gotten these sort of messages across, practice with what-if scenarios with your kids to make sure that they're actually getting it and could put it into practice if they ever needed it.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, though, how do you talk to your child to educate them but not scare them? Because all of this is very scary to a child, to a parent, to all of us.
Right. And I think what happens a lot of times, Ben, is that kids will actually ask you questions about something that might be occurring in their community. And at that point, you can answer the questions as forthrightly and honestly as you can, depending on the age of the child, and tell them that you want to talk to them about safety. You want to make sure that they're going to be okay and that they know that they can come to you if anything is bothering them or making them frightened or confused. Or if anybody is saying or doing anything that's making them frightened or confused. So the real message here is reassurance, reinforcing the basic safety tips, like being together with somebody else, checking in with parents or guardians, and getting away if they're ever confronted, recognizing and avoiding these situations rather than trying to teach kids how to pick out good people and bad people. I mean, we can't do it, so we certainly can't expect our kids to do it.
Nancy McBride of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, 1-866-780-9100. Nancy, I don't know how it was when you were younger, but when I was younger, we were let as kids to roam the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It was a different time. Mm-hmm. You could, in summer months especially, go out and maybe you got hungry, then you'd come back and mom
right.
and dad would see you. Maybe you wouldn't, and you'd roam from house to house, and it was a great time. I wonder if things have changed, or have we just become more aware of the dangers? There were certainly dangers back then as well.
Well, there were, and I think it's a combination of both of those issues, Ben. I think the fact that we know we have over 750 registered sex offenders in this country is pretty compelling information. And we also know that 100,000 of them about are missing in action or non-compliant. We know so much more. There's so much more awareness. And the fact that we have this awareness is actually a good thing, that parents and guardians can do their due diligence. And we understand now, it'd be a lot easier if we could just believe it's some scary weirdo hiding behind a tree. But in actuality, the people who hurt kids are generally known to the child or the family. The greatest danger comes from somebody who's known. So the unknown abductions, although they are horrendous, are also the most rare of the crimes against children. So I think the message to parents and guardians is to do your due diligence, take advantage of the tools you now have available to you. You can check sex offender registries. You can get background checks done on people. And make sure that those people who have contact with your kids are people you trust. And the more involved you are, the more likely it is that your child will come to you if they're ever faced with a situation they need help on.
Mm-hmm. I think we've got new technology to help us out here.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that
we
have apps, we have websites that you can actually find out who is a registered sexual offender in your area.
Exactly. Exactly right. And that's a good tool also to check people against. I mean, it's great to know who the registered sex offenders are, but it's also a way you can check out somebody else who has contact with your child that may or may not be on the register.
I think some of the other tips that you might want to mention here is, you know, of course, when a child disappears, we want to spread the identity of that child, what that child looks like, to as many people as quickly as possible. So keep a recent picture of them?
Absolutely. And I'm actually telling parents and trusted adults out there, snap a picture of your child walking out the door. I mean, if you're going to a place like an amusement park, take a picture of your child on your phone. Every phone I know of has a camera on it, and that way you've got the absolute most recent picture should your child get lost or you need help in some way. And when you go out, when you go to a crowded public venue, make sure that you've scoped it out and you've also talked to your child about what they should do if they get lost and who they should seek out for help.
Mm-hmm. And also note height. Sometimes we lose
sure.
track. They can shoot up 2 or 3 inches in a year, and
yes.
you might be saying, I don't actually know how tall Jane is.
Right. And you don't want to be in that state of confusion if you need that information quickly. So we actually recommend updating the photo every 6 months unless something changes with the child's appearance. For example, they lose teeth. You might want to take that picture and keep that one handy.
We've got about 2 or 3 more minutes left, Nancy. Now, your center is called the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. Talk a little bit more about the exploitation side of that.
Well, we have an Exploited Child Division unit that actually analyzes leads. We are obviously involved with trying to find out who is distributing child pornography, who is trying to entice children online. We work very closely with the Internet Crimes Against Children task forces all across the country. And as you know, a lot of those groups are doing undercover investigations of people who prey on children, trying to get them to meet in real life or sending them inappropriate material. So our group is very involved with that aspect of it. And we actually deal with sexual exploitation outside the family. So anything to do with someone who has exploited a child, whether it's a coach or whether it's somebody else involved in a program in that child's life, those are the cases that we're investigating and working on.
Let's try to squeeze one call in toward the end of the hour. Rick is with us from Kelowna. Hi, Rick. Have to be quick, please.
Yeah, just wonder if anyone is doing this where they're pushing out pictures of missing kids maybe that don't qualify for an Amber Alert but are suspected might be missing and getting it out on a localized basis to public that would welcome that kind of thing, to smartphones.
Hmm. Okay. Anything to say about that as far as the use of new technology, Nancy?
Well, that's an interesting idea. We have probably close to 400, we call them photo partners, all across the country who help us distribute missing children's flyers. And as a matter of fact, we encourage the public to get involved with us at missingkids.com and receive those different flyers in your region and help us get the word out. And, you know, obviously partners like Walmart who have the missing children posters in their front entryways. There are so many ways to get the pictures out, and certainly it's just one set of eyes that needs to see that photo to help us identify that child.
Nancy McBride, let us end this conversation by having you tell us, what do you think are the key ways to reducing the number of children who go missing or are exploited? What can be done that isn't being done now?
I think we need to do a better job of teaching our kids what to do in these types of situations. And I mentioned briefly our attempted abduction analysis. The good news about that is those are the kids who got away, and 81% of over 7,000 incidents we've investigated, the kids got away because they knew what to do. So we know kids can be taught, we know they can use their heads, and we know they can get out of these situations. So that's what I think we need to be doing more of.
Nancy McBride, how are you supported there at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children?
We receive some government funding and also private sector funding, so we're a combination of both entities.
And how do we find you on the web?
Missingkids.com.
Nancy McBride, thank you for joining us, National Safety Director at the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. We appreciate it, Nancy. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. Help today, production assistance from Allison Sullivan. Technical support from Julie Englander. In Des Moines, help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of River to River available. All you need do, go to iowapublicradio.org for any of our past shows. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.